Ah, salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday, the 31st of March 2010. Well, what have you got for you on this episode? Well, usually we bring you our news and rumours, and we're going to do exactly the same this episode as Juz and Craig join me as we look at everything that's been going on in Walt Disney World and Disneyland Paris for the past couple of weeks. We're then going to go on to our next segment of the Around the World in 80 segments, where we're going to be looking at Frontierland and specifically looking at their shopping and their dining in Frontierland. And then we're going to bring you a brand new segment that we haven't done before, one that we entitle Disney Island Discs, and we'll explain a little bit more about what that segment is when we get to it. So there you go, that is episode 38. So without any further ado, let's get on with this edition of the Disney Brit Podcast.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
Hello, welcome to the news and rumours for this edition of the show. As always, joining me is Juz. Hello, Juz.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Disney Pod people.
Oh, you sound really unhappy.
Because we've done this 8 times now.
That's true. We do have sound issues. Hopefully, it's all going to be fine. So, hopefully, Craig doesn't sound like he's in a box. Hello, Craig.
Hello. Stop that pigeon.
What?
I've been watching Wacky Races, actually.
You've been sniffing something you shouldn't have been.
I've been getting the kids into Wacky Races and Top Cat. They're the cartoons I've been watching. And they both love.
Mention them. Yeah. You do realise they're just going to be like Starred Out or Beeped Out or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's move on. Let's move on to some Disney news, shall we? Before you, I don't know what next. Okay, we're going to start off over Walt Disney World then, and a bit of information about the Tronorail, which is what the monorails are currently being called, over on the Epcot line. The Epcot branch has 2 new monorails, which have been adorned with the Tron Legacy artwork. We talked about this on the last episode. Well, they are now up and running, 2 of the monorails on the Epcot branch. They look fantastic, actually. When we were saying the artwork looked amazing, well, they look even better in real life. The new designs do completely wrap up the entire monorail, and it looks likely that they're going to stay there until the film is released in the US, which I think is December time. Am I right in thinking that?
Mm-hmm. Looks really cool, I think.
They do look really cool. I don't know whether they quite work going over the top of the Flower and Garden Festival. It's sort of 2 very weird worlds colliding, but they do look fantastic.
It's funny, though, because Orlando Sentinel's reported the fact that there is now a Marmite situation with these. The fact that loads of people hate it, and
and
I really quite like it, to be honest with you.
I love it.
See, and Craig and Adam loves it. So,
You see, I'm in 2 minds about this monorail. I like it, but I like it from a distance, and I'm a bit worried that when I get up really, really close to it and I see the graphics and everything on it, it's just not going to look quite as good as it does when you're further away from it. It's a great idea, you know. It's a great marketing idea, and I think Epcot's definitely the right park for it, but I'm going to reserve judgment until I see it, I think.
What sort of distance are you not scared of it and you do like it, then?
Well, yeah, I do like it from a distance. I'll reserve judgment until I see it. But you're right, there's several people who've been on Facebook and have sort of put as their status, just seen the monorail, looks fantastic. Some people have put it in and said, what on earth is that hideous thing travelling around Epcot's monorail? So,
monorail.
It's obviously a monorail, yes. With funny stuff on it.
I think that's what he said about Zoe. He liked it from a distance. Oh, it was scary when he got up close.
Charles, you better wear a tin hat and mask, mate.
Oh, dear me. My only thing about it is that you've got the front of the monorail has the Tron vehicle on it, the Tron cycle, and then the rest of it is sort of like nothing. It's just colour. And I wonder whether they could have come up with something a little bit more interesting for the back half of it.
I'm the other way around. I think the Tron cycle ruins the monorail. I like just the colour.
Yeah, okay. I do. My worry about it is when Rapunzel comes out, they're going to put her on the front like her hair going all the way down.
All the way down.
In a big plait. That's what I'm worried about, because I don't want this to be the start of something new, you know, High School Musical style.
Well, I was about to say, is it going to be High School Musical as well?
Yeah, this is nice, but it's not going to be a one-off. This is something they think is brilliant, and they're going to start doing it to all of them now, aren't they?
Yeah, so are you going to get the High School Musical 4 monorail and the what is it, Tangled now, isn't it? The Rapunzel one monorail and the Cars 2 monorail and all that sort of stuff.
The Minnie Mouse monorail by Adam Goodger, the nice yellow and purple one.
Was that a little plug there? You murder me for plugging my book. Can I point out, it's never me that plugs a book. It's always Craig.
I think a Family Guide one would look better, Jazz, don't you?
I do. Do you know what, though? Why shouldn't it be that? Why shouldn't you have a monorail promoting a Disney thing? You know, it's Disney World at the end of the day, so I think, why not? I quite like different monorails representing different films and stuff, and then when the kids get on it, they can relate to it more than just, it's a monorail.
It's very true. You go into Universal, you go into Hollywood Studios, they've got posters everywhere for the latest television programs and films they're getting out. I suppose it's only the same sort of idea, except for it's moving.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't have a problem with it, to be honest.
Cool.
Right, sticking with the theme of transportation, Juz, what you got?
Yeah, you might have caught last week there was a bit of a collision on Disney sort of property again. A Disney transportation bus crashed into the back of a stationary Waldorf Astoria bus, which was looking like it perhaps shouldn't have been where it was, or shouldn't have stopped where it was. All guests were unhurt in the end. There were several reports of people being seen, but they're unhurt. The driver sustained serious injuries, and the crash is still under investigation. Once again, a bus crash on Disney property hits the headlines everywhere.
Yeah, another bit of transportation news that's really hit headlines, isn't it? What is it about this at the moment? Why do you think this is happening?
I think you tend to find sometimes if someone has a bit of bad luck, then the focus is immediately on them, so that every time anything happens, it picks up again and again. You see that with anyone the media gets a claws into, and I think the media have got the claws into Disney at the moment.
That's true. It could be that. It just seems strange that there's been so much and it's been hyped up. Admittedly, there's been bus crashes in the past and it's just sort of like, oh, bus has crashed, that was it. Because the monorail, things have been hyped up. But there does seem to be a large number of accidents recently. Is it just me, or do you think that's true?
I don't know. I think they're just being highlighted more, Adam. I don't think there's particularly any more than there has been. But, you know, ever since the poor accident on the monorail, it's just been brought to people's attentions, and they're just having every opportunity to get a cheap headline.
That's true. And actually, you've got to think about the number of buses that run around property, the monorails, all those sort of stuff, just how many people are transported and how much how the transport infrastructure for Disney World is phenomenal. And in comparison to how many buses and things there are very, very few accidents. So I think, you know, it's the same with anywhere. The higher number you've got, the more likely there is of an accident. So I think it's probably just the media blowing out of proportion, a bit like we're doing now. Okay, let's head into the parks then. Let's go over to Magic Kingdom.
Okay, Summer Nightastic Fireworks Show has been named, and it's got a brilliant name. It's called the Summer Nightastic Fireworks Spectacular.
How long did it take them to come up with that? Someone sat around the desk going, what
should we do that? Well, the show will be the popular Music, Magic and Mayhem show. So it's not a new show, including the perimeter pyrotechnics that were shown during Disney's Princess and Pirate Party. The show will have a new introductory dialogue, though. So it show will be identical to Magic Music Mayhem, which was shown, I think, in the final season of Parties Just Gone. All eight of the perimeter launch locations are now in place. They'll be running from Space Mountain all the way around to Splash Mountain. It will place wishes for the summer period for 70 nights, which will run from the 6th of June until August the 14th. Now, all of this information has come from WDWmagic.com, and they are insistent that it will be the same show as before, although Disney are telling us that it will be a brand new show. But it looks like same meat, different gravy to me.
Yeah, it seems strange that they've never agreed on this. Ever since the news broke about it, WDWmagic.com have got this thing that the fireworks show will be Magic Music Mayhem. To be honest, I'm really not bothered if it is. I never saw it. It was supposed to be a phenomenal fireworks show. People have said that it's one of the best ones they'd had on property. But Disney is saying that it's this brand new show, something completely different, new music, new fireworks, a whole lot. And there seems to be this discrepancy, and sort of WDW Magic have been saying, yes, this is going to be what the fireworks show is, just going to have a new introductory dialogue. And I think are Disney sort of saying, we're doing a brand new show? If they don't, and this is actually the show that's coming out, is this going to be egg on their face, do you think?
I think they wouldn't say it unless they're doing a brand new show, would they?
Well, no, exactly. They've said in the press conference right at the beginning, it's a brand new show.
Yeah, they might have changed a few colours or done something.
Yeah, so what do you denote as brand new when we come? You know, you
think they've changed the music but kept the same pyrotechnics, maybe.
Could be.
Who's going to know? I'm not going to know. I couldn't tell you the difference. Could
I don't care. It's a new fireworks show. It's something different to Wishes. End of story, end of the day. That's fine with me. So there you go. Okay. But interesting that the Wishes dessert party have returned. They started back on the 28th of March. And there's been no announcement as to how long these are going to be continuing for. But I would say it's a safe bet that they're going to be going on through the summer, if not longer than that. But interesting, they're known as the Wishes dessert party. But yet the Wishes is only going to be on until June the 6th. So I wonder whether they're just going to keep the same dessert party or they're going to change the name of it. I know it's a minor discrepancy, but these have been extremely popular. There are several people who've contacted me via Facebook saying, oh, we've managed to book ourselves into this. Or on the other hand, a lot of people are saying, we just can't get a place for this dessert party. We just can't get in. So there's obviously a demand for this, and it's good to see that it's returned.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think, you know, we need to keep going. But once again, they put it in, then they take it out. So it's a bit bizarre sometimes.
I'm very tempted.
We tried to get there last summer, didn't we, Adam, to try and get in there, and we couldn't. Yep. It was booked up. So and I think they had they started off with a lower price and then have hiked it a little bit as well. So interesting to see what the price comes back at and how busy it is.
I think the price is the same as it was last time, which for me is just a little bit on the high side. If it was a little bit cheaper, I might have gone for it. But there's been no complaints. People have said it's well worth the money. Okay, let's head into Epcot then. And what we got in there, Juz?
It's a couple of competitions for the people who live in Florida. That's just jealousy, sorry. You can actually win a four-day Florida residence pass to enjoy the parks through the Epcot's Flower and Garden Festival. To enter, you can go to www.epcotgardencontest.com. and play the Grow Your Own Garden game. Not only is this probably the better side of this, is you can actually, there's a chance to nominate a local community organisation, sort of the chance to get a garden designed by the Disney gardeners. I was going to say horticulturist, but I can never say it. both contests end on the 30th of April at 11:59 and 59 seconds. But yeah, go there. If nothing else, I think it'd be great to get, you know how fantastic the gardens look anyway, get the Disney gardeners out there to some sort of local community. I think it'd be a brilliant idea.
Craig, have you had a look at this yet?
I just literally clicked on it now. I was going to enter.
I was just wondering. And it's interesting, this Grow Your Own Garden game. And it'd be interesting to hear what you think of it, Craig, because I've obviously not been in because I'm not a Florida resident, fortunately. But with the massive thing there is at the minute of Farmville on Facebook, I wonder whether this is Disney going, oh, there's this massive thing about Farmville. Let's get in on this. Let's get people hearing more and more about the Flower and Garden Festival and start a competition.
Could be. I tell you what, though, the website's really nice. Nice, cool Epcot logo and a really cool kind of Topiary, Donald Duck and Pluto. So it's even worth look at the website, even if you can't enter, have a nose.
If they tried to do that, I wouldn't follow it, because after they destroyed my little child with VMK... by having a game that everyone loved and adored from kids and then just pulling the rug from underneath them. I won't support them in another game like that.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
That's fine. Thanks for that. But when I was researching these and looking for bits and pieces, one of the things I thought about was this sort of they're promoting this the Epcot Flower and Garden Festival again. Do you not feel, and I don't know whether this is just me again, that they're really beginning to push the marathons more, the Flower and Garden Festival more? This year's Food and Wine's got another marathon attached to it. Are they not beginning to really push these special events more than they ever have done before?
Yeah, they're ruining stuff by putting healthy stuff next to it.
They've moved I forget what the Christian festival's called now. It's totally forgotten
the name. Session.
No, the one that they do sort of September, October time.
Yeah, no.
It used to be at Hollywood Studios, and they've now moved that back to Magic Kingdom. So that's got a bigger presence as well. The Grad Knights have moved to Magic Kingdom as well. So it just seems that they're trying to push these special events more and more, which is, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it just does seem that Disney are beginning to push those things. Right, Disney Hollywood Studios, Craig.
Quick bit of news for you. The studio catering company has reopened 5 days early. This is the revamped menu that now includes bub-ba-da-bub, French fries. Thank you. Animal Kingdom.
That quick. Have you got something you want to go off and do or something? I don't know.
No. Not much to say about that. It's now got French fries.
Freedom fries.
I always find it strange that this place never sold French fries in the first place.
Did you? Are you really that sad?
No, because we ate in the summer at Studio Catering Company, and I went and ordered whatever it was I had. And just found it really bizarre that you had some of the food that you would normally get French fries with, and then they offered you a packet of crisps with it, which I always thought was a bizarre combination.
I often stood outside scratching my head, thinking I wish they did French fries, and I refused to go in. So then I went in and asked for chips and I got a packet of crisps. So I was happy.
Right, there we go then. Yeah, Craig's happy with anything as long as it's food. But it does put pay to the rumours that this was disappearing and everything was turning into an extension of sort of the Bugs Land for the Pixar area. Doesn't seem to be happening now, unfortunately. We can head to Animal Kingdom if you want, Craig, but we haven't got any news for Animal Kingdom because nothing interesting is going on there. But we're going to head into downtown Disney.
No animals have been named after me this week. Oh, okay.
Downtown Disney then, where Ride Makers, which we brought to you the information about a little while back, is now open. It's opened 25th of March. This grand opening took place and the location is expected to stay until at least the end of 2010. If you go inside, there is loads of stuff to look at. Not only can you go in and build your own vehicle, build your own remote control car, but there's some fantastic American cars in there on display, sports cars, 4x4s, all that sort of stuff that look amazing. Don't know whether you've seen any of the photos. Jack Spence at allears.net, his blog, has got a load of the photos on there for the different cars that are in. But it's the sort of place that you can go into, a bit like the area Test Track used to be like, which has sort of lost it a little bit. You've now got this area where you can just go and look at all of these different fantastic cars. And as Craig's just rightly pointed out on Skype, he did make this Bling Mini, which was, for me, the most ridiculous looking car. It's about $90, I think, isn't it, in total for this just massive mini thing. But is this going to last, do you think? Is this the sort of thing that's going to be a phase for 6-12 months where people are going to go in and love it? Or is it something that people are just not going to bother with?
I think it'd be somewhere where I'd go in, look at the big cars, look around going, wow, that's nice. But after following his blog and it came out for $90 for that one car, I thought, it's a bit pricey, this.
Yeah. And difficult to transport in your luggage.
Yeah.
True. I mean, I hope it does stay because, it's a far better use of the space than that Diana exhibition. Mm. And the Build-A-Bear kind of franchise has been so successful in everything else that it's done. And, they're absolutely jam-packed every time you go in there. So, I do hope it stays. I just think that, they maybe need to concentrate on, there is a tourist captured area there and you need things that you can take back with you and will work over here, and have got, the right sort of power plugs and all that sort of things to charge things up with. So I think the concept of it is brilliant. And, I really hope it would stay longer than 2010 or the end of. And the cost of fitting it out must have been horrendous that, it should stay longer than that. But, you know, I mean, Build-A-Dino is still popular, and I, you know, we go in there every time we go to T-Rex. I know you love Adam. So, you know, for me, I hope it does stay. I think it's a pretty good idea.
But this goes back to that age-old question, doesn't it, that we always talk about is, do you go to Walt Disney World to buy yourself a remote-controlled car? Is it in the right location?
Yeah, we don't go there to buy a magnet, and you could go to Magnetron and buy
that's
one.
True.
You know, there's lots of things you wouldn't go to the left-handed shop. It's just another thing to do, isn't it? It's just,
but
you buy a car.
Those things are only $5 or $6 to buy, whereas this is $90 to $100 to buy.
Yeah, but I think that's just because it was a super duper duper at one. I'm sure you can get, you know, a bog standard mini without air conditioning and gold wheels for, you know, $30.
And can you get that on 5 years, 0% interest?
You can do, yeah. We can have it on the bubble options payment from BMW. We get
are there? That, what I want to know is, there people inside Ride Makers in their posh suits with their sunglasses on coming up, going, "It's a nice one, that one, that little beauty." Yeah, if you want to come and sit down at my desk, and we'll talk about some options about, you know.
I want a Toyota one. It not stop? It just keeps going. Yeah. And you lose it.
I want a West Coast Customs one where you've got, you know, Big Dane sitting in the corner pumping your ride with a plasma in the back of your little mini.
£250 for metallic paint there, and airbags are optional. And you can buy a little mini aerial Mickey topper to stick on the back of your remote control car. Wouldn't that be great?
Nice.
Just me. Okay, right. So another store opening in downtown Disney. Juz, what you got?
Yeah, it's the D Street Pass Holder Preview this Saturday, the 4th of April, taking place between 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. Pass holders will get a sneak preview of this brand new store. There you'll be creating your own vinyl mation table as part of the new store, as well as a list of new vinyl mation series characters, which are really great. We like them. I think they're a bit pricey, and Craig still went to get paid for his off Adam.
They're very pricey when I buy them. They're cheap for Adam. I love vinyl mations. You know, I've got four now on our little kitchen windowsill, and they're like little family members. So I need to buy two more and pretend they're you two.
So little family members.
I can pop them in the boiling water when you're annoying me and watch YouTube burn.
Craig,
no, I love them.
On the last Iron Orlando, we had a geek of stormtroopers. We now have a family of vinyl mation.
We do. Yeah,
that sounds nice.
Yeah. I'm the danger one, the one that's got the black one with the danger tape round. Alex is a little mermaid. I forget what Debs is, but Kieran's a little cheeky monkey. It's all nice. It's sweet. They have their own personalities.
Okay. I don't know. I was sort of excited for D Street, and then I heard it was just full of lots of animation, and I was a bit deflated by what we're going to get. I was hoping there was going to be a lot more. Hopefully there will be a lot more in there, but it seems to be a lot of the information that came out talks about animation.
It's the new pin trading, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah, completely. It is, but except for, I don't know whether... Do people trade Vinylmation?
You should. You do. You traded one of Craig's. You never got anything back for it.
I got nothing in return. It wasn't a trade. It was a flag.
Yeah, okay. Right, okay. Let's move out of Walt Disney World before I drop you two in boiling water. And we're going to fly over to Disneyland Resort Paris. And we... it looks like the balloon's gone.
It has Paramagique is no more. If you visit Disneyland Paris at the moment, you'll notice something missing from Lake Disney. The large helium-filled balloon, which I quite liked actually when I was there, is currently down and completely deflated. Now, bearing in mind these are supposed to be able to stay up for years with only a small top-up of helium once a year, it seems strange that this has happened. Does this mean that it is disappearing, or has somebody just shot it? Answers on a postcode, please.
Someone came in and went, "Yeah, get rid of that."
Bam. They had one of those nice rooms at the Sequoia Lodge, and they got the hunting rifle, and they, you know, took a shot from the window.
Look, this isn't JFK, you know. Right, this is just a balloon in Disneyland Paris. Someone's not spent a fortune on a suite at Disneyland Paris that they can set up their small rifle and
Jack
take
Bauer's
a shot.
Been there.
Be there 24 at Disneyland Paris. How cool would that be? They did an episode of 24 set in Walt Disney World or Disneyland Paris.
I'd love it. It'd be blown to bits afterwards.
Well, yeah, that's very true. Maybe we'll send staff. It's a small world. That'd be good. It's interesting that this is gone, but to be honest, I've always said, we should go on our next trip, or we should go on this trip, and I've never done it. I've never been on it because it's so expensive. I forget off the top of my head how much it is, but I know it's quite, I think it's about around sort of 15 to 19 euros, something like that. But also, it always seems to be down whenever there's an issue with weather. And there always is an issue with weather at Disneyland Paris, let's be fair. And it just seems that it's never up. And certainly in the past two or three visits I've been on, I've seen it in the air a handful of times. You can see it from the parks as well. So maybe Disney have actually thought, well, this isn't working. We're not making money on it. The weather's not good enough here for this. I think we need to scrap it.
I think weather's the point, actually. You know, in the Florida one, it's pretty clear all the time. And, you know, I wouldn't have gone on it when we went in January because it was just dark and you wouldn't have seen anything. It would just been the thrill of going up and coming down again. So, yeah, don't bother me either way, to be honest with you. I'd rather go on the Florida one, which I haven't done yet.
They're having problems with characters in flight as well with some of the weather conditions. High winds, things like that has stopped it a few times. I know certainly on WDW Today recently, they were talking about how they're not wasting their time waiting because they don't know how long it's going to be until they can go on again because a lot of the time they go up and it's closed.
I don't know.
It seems the weather's playing a big issue. So I wonder whether we are not going to see Panorama Chic. I have seen two photos there, which is interesting. One with the balloon and one without the balloon since it's come down. And it looks so much better without it. It's around the lake there. So, okay. So I'm going over to Disneyland, going into the park, into Disneyland Park. And the green construction fences have appeared outside Hakuna Matata restaurant in Adventureland. This is always, well, for quite a while now, has been a sort of seasonal location. But where they put the construction fences, it now seems quite difficult to get around. And it's causing some bottlenecks as well. But this unreported closure seems to be a big job because there is also signs outside the building. They put some of the signs up outside saying that these are the different eatery locations you can go to. One's the Cowboy Cookout, the other one is Colonel Haiti's Pizza Outpost as well. Because this venue's been seasonal for a while, and it is quite a big space, and there's actually been several times I've been past there recently where the Disney's orchestra were rehearsing. They were rehearsing a night on Bald Mountain at one point. You could look through the door and see them rehearsing, and it wasn't even being used for a food location. So I wonder whether Disney are finally getting rid of this and they're going to put something different or more permanent in there instead.
I liked it, to be honest with you. Not quite sure what they're doing with it.
I don't mind the food. The food in there is fairly decent.
Yeah.
But it does seem that they are opening it less and less when I've been there.
It is true, but yeah, it was always busy. I'm not quite sure that, you know, food location, I'm trying to think what you've got opposite, haven't you? So,
yeah.
I suppose they could afford to lose it, couldn't they?
There's several of the smaller ones opposite, they're very rarely open as well. There's one that sells Dole Whips that I can't remember ever seeing open.
No, they're just annoying. It just says they do and then you can never get them.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully they're going to bring those back because that'd be well worth it. But I don't know what's going on there. We'll keep you updated as to whether this place is going to reopen, whether it's just a refurbishment, maybe a name change, or whether they are indeed changing it for something completely different. Right, let's head into Walt Disney Studios. What we got, Juz?
Yeah, the Tinker Toys are beginning to rise above the construction walls there. It seems that construction is progressing well with Tinker Toy structures beginning to rise above the walls of the Toy Story Playland area. They're certainly coming to life, this area now. I mean, remember when we went to look at it not so long ago, how desolate it all was. Although popular in the movies, it's an interesting toy choice, as Tinker Toys never became popular in France as they did in the US. I suppose they're trying to appeal to sort of all the audiences here. The rumoured of the original date, which was June, early July, seems to have been pushed back to mid to late August at the moment. So it's a bit of a shame, because I think they're going to miss one of the main seasons coming through that of the tourism. So
yeah, they will, but nearly the whole season, I suppose. Schools go back towards the end of August. So if you booked your Disneyland Paris trip for late August, you might be all right. But it's a shame that they are going to miss all that crowd. There's a lot of people who are going, well, especially as it's all been part of the new event, the new generation that kicks off the 2nd of April, that one big part of it, an entire new land, isn't going to be open until halfway through it.
I just can't get into the new generation at all.
We're going to talk about it in a second.
Sorry, okay, I'll bring up...
No, it's all right. bring it up in a second. Craig, you're not planning on going back to Disneyland Paris anytime soon, are you?
Maybe next year sometime, but no, not this year. So I don't need to book a room at the Tower of Terror. But there is a new tour that has come through the initial test phases, and this past weekend has been open to the press. This is a new tour of the Tower of Terror, and it starts from next weekend. Guests can enjoy the tour before park hours. So this is a 50-minute tour. It takes you through all the many takes you through many rooms of the hotel, as well as the gardens, and they reveal many secrets of the attraction. But you don't get to go backstage, and it's all in French. So if you're a fluent French speaker, or if you just want to have a laugh and try and work out what they're saying, you can pay €12 for the tour. It holds a maximum of 10 people. It's still in testing, so the details may change, and they may hopefully change the language or move the park to Spain.
Move the park to Spain?
Then it'd be in Spanish.
That'd be all right. It'd be nice.
I can't do Spanish either.
No.
I'd go along. I'd pay €12 just so I could stand there and translate complete rubbish to anybody who there was English. He's just said that the flowers look lovely in May. Something like that. It'd just be really quite amusing. Talking about Spain, though, just a quick side note. My parents have moved out to Spain now, and they were very excited the other day to ring me to tell me that apparently Paramount are building a theme park in Murcia, and the Paramount executives have said that this place is going to rival Disneyland Paris.
And be warmer.
And be warmer, yes.
And not be in France.
And... and be in Spanish.
And have manners. Be fantastic.
Oh, he's off again.
And you can always go in the 2 hours to have a siesta, so it'll be empty. So I'm going, you know, between 1 and 3. Be lovely.
It will be interesting to see whether this place is going to rival Disneyland Paris or not. There's not many details come out, but it's definitely going to be southern Spain, a place called Murcia, which is sort of close to Alicante, that sort of area. Probably a couple of hours from Benidorm. Anyway, that was just a very, very quick side note. I hope they do this in English, but I do wonder what they're going to be able to tell you, with it being a new attraction, and whether the things they're going to be able to tell you are any different to what you're going to be able to be told maybe if you go out to America. And it is a shame that it's all in French at the moment. Hopefully they will change that language.
It's a shame it's not backstage.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. You'd think that maybe they would be able to include some backstage, as it's before park opens. It's not like you're going to be in the way of anything that is happening, or you're going to be in a dangerous situation, because the ride theoretically isn't working yet. You would be the first ride of the day. Mm-hmm. Right, just brought up New Generation Festival, which does begin on the 2nd of April. And I wanted to tell you a little bit more information about each of the things that have been added to this. And the reason we'll do that is to give you some idea of where they're going with this. It also gives us a chance to sort of comment on what we think of the new stuff that's coming. So last Sunday, 28th of March, Disneyland Paris went all out and revealed the new theme to the press. Massive interest from the press. They had loads of stars there. Most of the time they have French stars there. They had a couple of English and American celebrities, including Adrien Brody this year. They also had a special preview of the new Disney show called the Disney Showtime Spectacular. Now, it's been previewing most of last week, has had really good response in previews from the people who've been in the park. They reckon it's one of the best shows they've had there so far, and the press seem to have really enjoyed it as well. This new show I'll come to in a second, but they've got other bits and pieces that have come along with it as well. They've got the new look All-Star Express, which is once again the train made over, but this time they have added some more bits to it. But the one thing they did do was they had a very special evening show that was presented in the Light Motors Action Arena, and they projected onto all of the buildings. Did any of you guys see the video of it?
No.
They projected onto the buildings all of the different attractions from all over the parks. They had things parachute in there as well. And this had easily 100 cast members in it, including all of these new generation characters that are in there. And I'm still struggling to work out why some of these characters are in this new generation. I'll come to that in a second as well. But this show is spectacular. It is huge. And it does last a decent amount of time. It's sort of 10-15 minute show, bearing in mind they were doing it as a one-off. But it's on a massive scale, because of the stage that it's on, and there's some photos around, some video around of it, so do check them out, especially on YouTube, and I think DLRP Magic's got them as well. But this Disney Showtime Spectacular is sort of centres around these new generation characters. Mickey's in there as well with some of his friends, sort of helping along the story. It's a little lighter this time on human cast members. Last year's Mickey and Friends, part of the time Mickey and Friends had loads of cast members, human ones, and quite a few character cast members as well. This year they're lighter on those humans. They've still got quite a few... there seems to be a larger number of characters, and the largest number of character costume changes ever tried by Disney. Mickey changes costume for every single new character that comes out, for all the different settings and all the different songs. The show lasts about 20 minutes, and it's got songs and music and characters from the following films. Interestingly, the first song you hear is from The Fox and Hound, Best of Friends, which they've updated. Still a bizarre choice. Then you've got Toy Story, who I would sort of class as a new generation character in the sense that it's from Pixar. You've got Lilo and Stitch. That's the one that still throws me. I still don't see how Lilo is still a new generation character. They've not had a new film out for quite a few years now. They're old. Yes, he's mischievous and he's quite a fun character, but he's failed with the stuff he's done in Disneyland Paris recently. What with the Dance Time and Discovery Land with Lilo and with Stitch particularly, it just didn't work. And it's interesting that they're still including him as a new generation character. I'd be interested to hear why you think that is. The Incredibles are in there, Monsters, Inc., Ratatouille, and Princess and the Frog is in there as well. The All-Star Express has also debuted, had a new lick of paint, but as we talked about, we rumoured about a couple of episodes ago, it does feature a new miniature carriage in the middle that has got the first ever appearance of Wall-E. Unfortunately, he is not Living Character Initiative Wall-E. He is just on top of the float. I don't know whether he moves. I haven't seen a video of it. We're still waiting to hear news about Monsters, Inc. Scream Academy as well. Gorgeous, what's your opinion on this new generation festival?
It does absolutely nothing for me. I mean, you know, see all the adverts on television with the kids, etc. There's nothing. It doesn't ring to Disney. They say new generation, nothing's really explained on the advertising as such. I just think this is a flop. It's they've lost something on this, and I think it's a big mistake, and I'm not quite sure why they've done it and not explained it in the advert and just a few things parachuting in. No, it's just not Disney at all. I think that Craig will probably mention in a minute, I think the name's poor as well.
Yeah, Craig, what do you think?
It just doesn't gel to me. You know, new generation is too much like next generation Star Trek, so I think it's a wrong choice of name.
I can think of that, yeah.
So, and what does it mean by new generation? Does it, you know, is that it means all the new stuff that they're doing, and you know,
I
they've cut
know.
Off from all the classic stuff from the past, but then, you know, you still got Lilo and Stitch, which I would say was a Walt Disney classic film rather than a new film. Is it only Pixar stuff? Is that what they're talking about? Because it's all computer generated, and maybe I just don't get it. But then Princess and Frog is hand drawn, so to me, it just doesn't. Some marketing man has bumped his head and not come up with this properly. I don't want to be negative because it's something new for the park, and you know, that's great, but I just don't get it. Maybe I'm being thick, but it just doesn't ring true to me.
No, I'm completely with you on this. I don't get what new generation is. It just seems a bit of a wishy-washy title for me. That what is this new generation? Are we talking about any film that was released since 19... What was Lilo and Stitch? 92, something like that? Because I just don't get where they're going with this. I can see Toy Story, okay? That's fine. They've had the new film coming out this year, so they are still part of this new generation. Are they talking about new generation as in generation of kids, the sort of films they watch? The Incredibles, fine. Monsters, Inc., Ratatouille, and Princess and the Frog, obviously brand new. I'm really confused by the title. The Showtime Spectacular itself, I have seen, and I actually quite like it. I think it's a good show. But to be honest, I liked its part-time show as well. I thought that was quite nice. But I can see where they're coming from. You know, there are seriously a huge amount of costume changes in this. It's unreal just how many times Mickey comes out of the floor in a different costume. And none of these LEDs this time either. But I don't know. I'm confused by the whole name of it as well. But I will, you know, as always, I'll keep an open mind. I'll see what happens and I'll see what the reaction is and see if it really does drag people into the parks.
Maybe it's just poorly translated from something that was in French.
It could be. That's possible. Wouldn't have happened if it was in Spanish.
No, exactly.
Right. That's all of the news we've got for the parks. I do have one more piece of news for you, and that is when you listen to this show, it will be less than a month until Mouse Meets. We better start planning it, really, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
I should really do something. And because it's less than a month to Mouse Meets, and we have all this sort of stuff that's going on, we need to tell you a couple of bits. So, Mouse Meets 2010, sponsored by Castle China. We thank them very much for doing that. We've got two little things I want to tell you about. Firstly, if you have got a ticket for Mouse Meets, you will have received an email. And if you've bought a ticket in the past couple of days, you will be receiving an email to tell you about the meal on the... Saturday evening. We are going to be going to Frankie and Benny's, which is one that's about 10-15 minutes walk from the Crown Plaza. They've got a group booking for us there. We're nearly three quarters of the way full for that evening. So if you are wanting to come on that meal, you need to send us an email, reply to the email that came through to you, letting us know your name and how many people you want to come to that meal, and we'll enjoy that on the Saturday evening. But also, I've had a couple of emails from people and a message on Facebook asking, can we have a rough itinerary of what's going to be happening when and the timings? And what I'm in the process of, I'm very, very nearly, well, by the time you listen to this, I will have finished, is the Mouse Meets event guide. We're going to be releasing that as a download with this podcast. So you're going to be able to release, you're going to be able to read it by downloading it from the iTunes feed. Also, it's going to be available from the Mouse Meets website, isn't it, Juz?
It is indeed, yes, definitely.
Yeah, and also I'm going to be emailing it to everybody who has bought tickets. So in one way or another, you are going to get a copy of this events guide. That is the only way you'll get one. We're not going to be handing them out when you get there. It's just a case of you printing it off and bringing it with you. It's going to have all the information in there, RE parking, to do with the different events that are going to be going on. It's also going to be bits and pieces to do with places to be, where to be and when. And also it's going to have all the information about how to obtain tickets, things like that, when you get there. You need to bring your e-ticket with you, obviously. The final thing is to let you know about our guest speakers. People have been asking who are the guest speakers and what are the guest speakers, and we can now officially announce to you who our two guest speakers are. And our first one is our very own Mr. Orlando, Craig Duncan, isn't it, Craig?
Yes, it's me. I'm going to do a brilliant stand-up routine I've been working on for half an hour. Politically correct. It's going to be very, very funny. All the outtakes from the show and basically taking a mickey out of Adam for half an hour.
Yeah, and there'll be some Rotten Tomatoes on the door for you to take and throw at him. No, in all seriousness, Craig, one of the things we were talking about Mouse Meets, we want to make it Disney, but also we know a lot of people go out to Walt Disney World. And every time I put something on my Facebook status about I want to live out there, everyone's like, well, if you know where you can do that, then let me know. And we thought to ourselves, what is the closest thing we could do to help people? And Craig has been through the whole stressful, nightmarish process of buying a house in Orlando. And we said to ourselves, well, actually, wouldn't it be great for Craig to pass on all the things, all the mistakes he made, all the things that he did right, all the things that he'd learned from buying a house out there, pass that on to the people who are coming to the event. And that would be a great way for us to share some great stuff with you guys. So Craig's going to bring us a talk really on buying your house in Orlando, the best ways to do, the pitfalls and all that sort of thing, which will be fantastic. But we also have another guest speaker. His name is Andre Willey. He owns PortOrleans.org, and we were fully aware that there are a lot of people who really enjoyed listening about Disney trivia to do with the theme parks and to do with the movies and things like that. And one of the things I think we're really bad at, one of the things we don't cover as much as I'd like us to, is resorts. And Andre has got this PortOrleans.org as his website, which has absolutely everything you need to know about Port Orleans resorts, about the history of them, all those sort of things. And he's going to come as guest speaker. He's going to do a talk for us about the history, the backstory of the Port Orleans resorts, which I know, Jez, you're going to find really interesting. I know I'm going to find really interesting as well.
Yeah, at least there's one decent speaker, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well,
there's three, because there'll be the two that the sound are coming out of, and then Andre. But I think they're two very, very different elements. We wanted to make sure that we catered for as many people as we possibly could. You know, there are people who aren't theme park geeks like we are, but are interested in Orlando, and it might be a different way for them. And then the resort people, those people who enjoy spending a couple of days of their holiday wandering around the resorts. We wanted to really cater for those as well. So there are two guest speakers. I think that is everything we haven't announced yet. Am I right thinking that?
Yeah, no refunds now we've told you Craig's a speaker.
Yeah, no refunds now.
No refunds, no heckling. Okay, and autographs will be available.
In fact, we're going to give people heckling sheets with things that they can say out loud. We're just going to let them heckle you, that's fine. But no refunds, no heads, Craig, yeah, that's fine.
Join me and Adam in the bar if you don't want to listen to
Craig. Yeah, if someone could just come and get us and let us know when he's finished, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Oh, we are cruel. But there you go, Mouse Meets update for you, just to let you know what's going on there. And that is the news for this episode. Weeks ago you left us in Frontierland, we're still here, and we're going to be looking at the restaurants and shops within Frontierland as part of our Around the World in 80 segments. But before we do that, when I was at the Big Dib weekend in Haven a couple of weeks ago, I was not accosted, I was confronted by Steve, who does listen to the show. Hello, Steve. And he said to me, I'm disappointed you missed one thing out on your Frontierland segment, and that is, which is the best place to sit on Big Thunder Mountain? Is it the front or the back? So, my question to you is, where do you think the best place to sit on Big Thunder Mountain is?
The back.
The back? Why?
You do it both. You ride both.
You get more airtime at the back, and I have more chance of squashing my kids.
Okay. Craig, are you the same reasons?
Yeah, no, I mean, you do get the whip from the back. I think you do in all roller coasters. I like, unless it's one of those ones where you've got your legs hanging down, where it's completely, you know, life-threatening going in the front row. I think the back, for those sort of old-fashioned ones, definitely the back, just because it's a little bit faster and a bit more of a thrill.
And that's good. I'm glad you said that, because it doesn't make me look stupid, because I said at the back as well, for two reasons. One, on some roller coasters, if you sat at the front, you get a clear view of what's going on. If you sit at the front of Big Thunder Mountain, you just get the carriage of the actual train in front of you rather than anything else. Also, with the hills, when you go up the hill, if you sat at the front, you go halfway down the drop of the hill, still hanging, waiting for the back of the train to come round. So you don't get the speed for all of the attraction. And you do at the back, because obviously you're the last one to come over the top, and that's when the train takes that dive down the hill. So I went for back, both for speed, does whip you about a bit, and the fact that you actually get a really good view from the back. And as we did the geeky thing on Pirates of the Caribbean, we told you the story about how we sat on the attraction and watched everything from behind. You can do the same thing on Big Thunder as well, and it's quite cool. I've ridden the whole of Big Thunder Mountain by looking behind me rather than looking in front. Very different viewpoint, very different ride as well. Geek. Yeah, I am, but there you go. Right, let's head into our restaurants then for Frontierland, and we're going to start off with what I think is possibly my all-time favorite counter service location in the whole of the Magic Kingdom, maybe the whole of Walt Disney World, and I think there's a lot of people agreeing with me on this, and that is Pecos Bill's Tall Tale Inn and Cafe, which for me is a fantastic place to go and eat. Meals, you get things such as barbecue pork sandwiches, you get a £3 cheeseburger, and this is the best one, a deluxe £3 Angus cheeseburger, vegetable burgers, Caesar salads, taco salads, chicken wraps, and you get a fixings bar there as well. And let me explain a little bit more about this fixings bar. It is basically a buffet-style area with every possible topping you can think of that you want on top of your burger, and it is included in the cost of your meal. So you just go up there, you buy a burger, and then I just go and pile mushrooms on until I can't fit any more in. And then putting that in there. Sides and desserts, things like chili cheese fries, French fries, and chili as well. Drinks, the usual sort of stuff, yogurts, carrot cake, that sort of stuff in there. What do you guys think about this place?
Yeah, I love it. I always get the chili there, and I still then go to the fixing bar and top up the chili stuff. Bit pricey with the deluxe Angus burger. You should mention it's, you know, not far short of $10 a burger.
I bet it tastes good.
Yeah, but I think you don't need it because you've got the fixing the fixing bar there. Is the fact that you can pile up with massive amount of gherkins and everything like that. I like it, and it's really, really cool as well, which should be noted. And, you know, it's so hot there. You go straight in there, and it's just a lovely, cool environment. And it's really quiet toilets as well, if you're dashing around when it's quiet.
That's very true. That's very true. Craig, what do you think?
I really, really like it there. I like the toppings bar, fixings bar, apart from the sauerkraut, which I always mistake for onions, which I hate, and I love onions, so I put that on and go, oh crap, I've done the wrong one again. So they all go in the bin. I do like it. The only problem I have with it is that the kids, whenever in the Magic Kingdom, they want to go to Pinocchio House, Village House.
No!
And so Yeah, exactly, which I hate. And so I'm always saying, okay, because I love you and you're so cute, we'll go there. But next time, can we please go to Pecos Bill? And I always say yes. So actually, we are definitely going there in April because I haven't been there for ages. And that £3 cheeseburger has my name written all over it.
I know.
I haven't had the Angus one before, so I might treat myself and get a couple of quid off you, Adam, and go for that.
The £3 Angus burger, though, sounds amazing. Topped with bacon, onion rings and barbecue sauce. Oh.
I think it's the primo place, isn't it, to eat, really, for counter service in the Magic Kingdom, as far as I'm concerned.
What would you give it out of 5?
5.
I'd give it a 5 as well, definitely. Just a couple of interesting things to point out and a tip to give you as well. They've got a seating system that's working in Pecos Bills at the moment because it is so busy. What people often do is they all go in, they say, you guys sit at that table there, I'll go and order the food and I'll bring it over to you. They've now got cast members in there that are stopping you from doing that. You go in, you have to queue or stand in the queuing area with your family. And then once you have a tray of visible food in front of you, the cast member will take you to a table and sit you down. Apparently, it is working wonders. And it means that there are more free tables now and people are getting through the restaurant a little bit quicker than they were.
Okay, well, because it's always that fear. You do it because the fear is by the time you get there, there'll be no table and you've got a tray full of food and some squawky children.
Mm. Well, I had the same worry about Fuente del Oro in Frontierland in Disneyland Paris. They'd started doing exactly the same thing. And I was concerned that it was going to cause issues with not having a table. But actually, completely the opposite. It turns out that it made it a lot easier. And it meant that there were definitely tables spare when we were in there. And that was good to see. So we're all giving it 5 stars, which is fantastic. So that's good stuff. Right, let's move on then to... Well, we've got the Westward Ho refreshment stand, which is a small stand, really. Sells corn dogs, chips, lemonades, drinks, all that sort of stuff as well. Whereabouts is this exactly located? Does anybody know? Because I really struggled to picture it.
I've never heard of it, actually. It just doesn't ring. I think the problem is because it's so dominated by the one we've just spoken about, I think all the rest of them fall into insignificance.
That's true. So I thought
it was just down from, as if you come out of there and turn to your right, and you know where the little back path comes and meets the main path? Is it not there?
Oh, it could be. It could be down there. Oh, one thing I forgot to say, a tip for you, and this is something we found out about Pecos Bill. If you go for dinner just before the parade starts, okay, I think I may have mentioned this before, I'm going to mention it again just in case. If you go just before the parade starts and you go out the doors on the left-hand side, about three minutes before the parade begins, right by Pecos Bill is the point where they allow people to cross over to the other side of the parade route, and about 2 or 3 minutes before the parade starts, they close it off. And of course, that then suddenly gives you another queuing area. And we came out of Pecos Bills, we saw these people, we went to go over to cross, and as we got there, they closed it off and we stopped, and we didn't have to wait for the parade whatsoever. We had a perfect vantage point and we watched the entire parade from that location without having to wait.
Cool.
So it was absolute, complete, total, utter look. But if you're out there a few minutes before and you're ready for it, you can get yourself a place. Golden Oak Outpost. Now, I do know where this is. This is as you walk up from Adventureland up towards Pecos Bill. It's on your left-hand side. In here, they do some slightly different things. You've got a fried chicken breast sandwich. You've got chicken BLT flatbread, vegetable flatbreads, chicken nuggets, fries, chocolate cake, cookies, and your usual drinks in there. Has anybody eaten from in here?
I think we tend to use it because you've got the better ones right by it on both sides. You tend to just get a drink, don't you? And that's about it.
I've had the BLT flatbread from here, and I've got to say it was fantastic. It was really good.
Yeah, Mrs. Duncan said that as well because she gets fed up with burgers and fries, so she just goes in and has that. So, yeah, no, she really likes it. I wouldn't have it because there's a place that sells yummy burgers just around the corner that I'd go and have.
And Angus burgers, a third of a pound.
Yes.
Oh, my word. But I've eaten there before. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5, actually, because I don't think I've... The stuff I have eaten from there has been very, very good. Bearing in mind, it's such a small place. The food there is really, really good. It used to sell McDonald's fries, now doesn't, because McDonald's aren't in the parks anymore. So I'm giving it 4 out of 5 stars. Anybody else got a star rating for that? Because some people haven't eaten there.
No, I've handed my bottle of drink over really nicely, so I'll give it 3.
Okay, I'll give it 4 because Debs likes it. So there you go.
There you go, problem solved. Right, and this is another of my favourite places we're moving on to now. One that is only open seasonally, unfortunately, but if it is open, you are in for a real treat when you go down there. It's over on Tom Sawyer's Island, and it is called Aunt Polly's Dockside Diner. Either of you tweeting there?
Yeah, I've had the fudge brownie.
The fudge brownie.
Swells.
Oh,
swells
so
and Coke floats.
It's just an amazing little place. Now, this is right on the edge. It's sort of, if you're looking at Tom Sawyer Island, you look right over to the right. There's an area sort of on one corner which has got this diner on it. Aunt Polly is from the Mark Twain stories. And the decking area where you can sit looks right out over Haunted Mansion. You get some fantastic photos from there. But this place sells some of the most fantastic sundaes. They had apple pie sundaes, fudge brownie sundaes, strawberry shortcake sundaes, ice creams, ice cream floats. They're all just fantastic, and it's such a quiet area as well. Not many people venture over that far. They see it from afar, and people do come and sit in there, but it's usually very, very quiet. The only thing I will have found before when I've sat in there is birds. Probably birds. There's loads of them if you're not careful. But the sundaes are well worth the trip over to that corner. I've eaten there, Juz. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. What are you giving it?
I'll give it 4, simply because no matter what anyone says, some of the best ice cream in the world comes from Disney.
That's true. Craig?
Yeah, I will, just for the swells. I love the swells. So, yeah, 4 out of 5 for me.
Right, last one. Again, this one is seriously seasonal. You thought Aunt Polly's was seasonal. This is open even less. But when it is open, it does have really good reviews. I have never eaten there, unfortunately. I don't know whether you guys have. It's the Diamond Horseshoe. Way back originally, it was a sort of a food / entertainment venue. You would have to go and get a ticket from Main Street to actually get in for one of those particular shows to eat. And there's very, very little around on the internet because of what has been happening. I've tried to contact all sorts of people, and the only place where I can really find any decent information was the Walt Disney World website. You have an all-you-can-eat location in the evening, table service at lunchtime. As I say, it's located in Frontierland. The Disney website says the following. The Diamond Horseshoe is a fun, quick-service eatery during lunch and a casual dinner restaurant service, all-you-care-to-eat American dishes during dinner service. So I think they have a counter in there. You can go up and get your food, don't you? It's not table service at lunch, and then you go and sit yourself down. It says, at lunch, guests can select from a menu of sandwiches, such as barbecue turkey and a meatball sub for adults, turkey or PB&J for children, sounds great, and sides, including a fruit cup of potato chips. Join the all-you-can-eat dinner service. Share mouth-watering family-style platters of saloon salad, tossed mixed greens with strawberry vinaigrette dressing. Sounds interesting. And fare from the Ranch Hands Feast, roasted turkey breast, carved beef and smoked pork loin with sides of vegetables, herb bread stuffing and macaroni and cheese, served by a friendly staff dressed in Liberty Tree costumes. Beverages include soft drinks, Coke, coffee, iced tea and milk, with bottled water available for an additional charge. It's between $15 and $29.99 per person. Anybody eaten at Diamond Horseshoe since it's changed its format to this?
No.
Craig?
No, I haven't. In fact, actually, when this came through earlier on, I was looking through, I was checking to my folks and asked my dad if we'd ever eaten there, because I just couldn't remember, and he believes that we did long ago.
Right, okay.
Doesn't help, does it?
So I can't really give it a star rating, other than from what other people seem to say. I think it's probably going to be a 3 or 4 star. But if you are considering this as an option, do check ahead of time that it is going to be open, because it is very, very seasonal. Usually when it's open, when they get very high crowds and they need places for people to eat. I usually find that's when Disney announce it. They usually announce it on their website that it's going to be open. So at the moment, if you go onto the Walt Disney World website and go into the dining reservations online, it currently says that Diamond Horseshoe is open from this date to this date, and that is the only time you're going to be able to book for. But they're all the dining locations. If you have had to choose one to eat in, which one would you go for?
Ooh, that's a hard choice, isn't it? It has to be Pecos Bills.
Pecos Bills. Yeah, exactly. Not that Pecos hard. Bills. Pecos Bills. Yeah.
Pecos Bills, followed by Aunt Polly's, I reckon would be mine. But definitely Pecos Bills for me, just for that third of a pound Angus cheeseburger. Okay, right, just shopping very, very quickly. You've got two locations, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion on one of the two. One is the Frontier Trading Post. This is where you get all your Old West-style stuff, your cowboy hats, your sheriff badges, your Native American headdresses, your brightly coloured blue and red, I think, guns, because they're not allowed to sell traditional ones anymore, as we had that story a while back about the little boy trying to take his on an aeroplane. So they're all brightly coloured stuff now, but you can buy all your stuff from there. And also the Briar Patch, which is a shop that's attached to the Splash Mountain exit. You can buy all sorts of t-shirts related to Splash Mountain. It's just around the corner where you get your photos from as well. But they sell all of the Winnie the Pooh, Tigger, all that sort of stuff related merchandise in a Splash Mountain location. Anybody, please tell me why they do that.
I just think the Biopatch is almost like an afterthought or something, and has never really got its own identity.
No, they do sell the miniature monorail stuff and all those little bits and pieces in there as well, which are quite cool. But it just seems a strange location that just sells random stuff.
It's a really nicely themed outside location that you could make into... You could have it, you know, with all the Winnie the Pooh stuff, if you made it just like a collector's shop of that. Because, you know, you'd still make it that sort of feeling to it. But no, it just seems like whatever might be lying around, they can hang up on a coat hanger.
Is this, Craig, is this the location where we spent ages looking at the miniature train set?
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, that's where it was. I mean, my problem with it is, you know, because it's attached to Splash Mountain, you expect all of those to be there, but there's probably not that much they can kind of sell Blair Rabbit-wise, so they've added these bits in. But, you know, I think it's the wrong place for Winnie the Pooh, but I don't know what else. I think I would detach it from Splash Mountain, to be honest with you, and just have it as Juzzy says, a collector's shop or a standalone store.
And can somebody please tell me what it is about Splash Mountain and tie-dye psychedelic T-shirts? But what is that all about?
You find them, some of them, in Adventureland as well, don't you?
Yes.
You need to get the shops sorted in sometimes. It's sad when you get to certain shops and they just chuck everything in, you lose interest, whereas other shops seem to maintain a theming. And I think this is one which is wasted, because it could be a cult shop if they got it right with something.
Foundation. I think you're right. Every time I've been in there, I just remember seeing a psychedelic tie-dye Splash Mountain T-shirt. Just get rid of them. Nobody wears tie-dye anymore. Not even hypercolour tie-dye. They've gone. They went in the 80s.
When? No one's
okay.
That's my wardrobe for Mouse Meat's gone.
Oh, yeah, those Mouse Meat's hypercolour T-shirts I bought. Might need to get rid of them. Right, there you go. That's everything for our Around the World very short segment this time, because there really genuinely is very, very little food and definitely shopping-wise in Frontierland. And the next edition of Around the World, we are heading way, way back to the American past, to Liberty Square. So we'll join you for that one.
Attraction Tickets Direct is the UK's number one ticket provider for Disney, Universal, and the worlds of Discovery Parks. They offer unbeatable prices and expert advice on all the major tickets and attractions in Orlando, California, and Paris. The service Attraction Tickets Direct provides is second to none. Lines are open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Customers receive real tickets, not vouchers, within 7 days, and there are no hidden extras, such as credit card fees or postage surcharges. Now that's what you call great service. Log on to www.attractionticketsdirect.com or call free on 0800-975-0002.
We're going to start a new segment. This is one that we talked about way back about, so we were going to give it a try. And we're entitling it Disney Island Discs. Now, for those of you in the UK, we'll know on BBC, help me out, 2 or 4, can't remember, I've completely forgotten. Is it BBC, is it Radio 2 or Radio 4?
It sounds like a Radio 4 thing. There.
It's Radio
BBC 4. Radio, yeah.
They have something called Desert Island Discs, where they talk to a celebrity about... If they were deserted on a desert island, what songs would they take with them? So we are going to try it. That if you were deserted on a desert island, what Disney songs would you take? You are allowed 3 songs, but if we were really to push you, you had to give us one that would be your ultimate Disney song, and we will play that song right at the end of the show. So to start us off, to give us some idea where we're going, Craig's going to give us his top 3 Disney Island discs. And we're hoping that, I know we've already got some people lined up, they're going to come onto the show and they are going to give us theirs as well. So Craig, your Disney Island disc, you deserted, you're near Castaway Key. You're not quite close enough to be able to swim, but you're on an island. You're in the middle of the Caribbean. It's nice weather, so you ain't got to worry. There's no hurricane coming. You're allowed to take three Disney songs with you. So start us off with number three. What would be one of your songs to take on a desert island?
Okay. Well, I'll make sure I have a Dole Whip machine with me as well, and then I'll be happy with that and these three songs.
Like
oh, they're miserable. Number three would be A Circle of Life.
Circle of Life. Okay, that's a nice choice. Yeah. Is there a particular reason for you choosing Circle of Life as your number three?
Well, it reminds me of many things. It reminds me of the Philomagic show, which I absolutely love. It's one of my favourite shows in Magic Kingdom. And I also, you know, I just think it's I like the Festival of the Lion King. I love the show The Lion King. And I just think, it's typical Elton John. It's just one of those beautifully written songs. It's got lovely words, lovely meaning. And I just think it builds nice. It's just one of those songs that I still listen to on my iPod now on the train. And I just really, really like it. I think, you know, it's just a beautifully written song. So, you know, it's modern as well. So I like all of those things. When you put the comparison in my three songs, I tried to pick something that's kind of different from new generation and old generation or whatever bloody generation they come up with. So this is like a Disney 2.0 song. It's a new Disney, new song, new writers, and I just think it's beautiful.
It's a strange writing choice, a writing partnership as well. You've got Tim Rice, very musical theatre at the time, and then you had Elton John, who was at the time of Lion King not a musical theatre writer. He is far more than he was now. And I think it's a great song. I think you're right, it really does sum up it was one of Disney's biggest grossing movies. It was the start of that sort of Disney decade for the movie writing, wasn't it? Or part of that, anyway. And it's just such a fantastic song. Juz, would it have made your top three?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's brilliant. Great choice there, mate. I can just imagine you on the train bursting into song there while you're listening to it.
It's a circle. Yeah,
that's not.
Do you, at the end of the song, do you stand up and hoist your iPod in the air? A bit similar.
I love that boom right at the end with the beat. I just imagine Adam on his big drums just giving it, you know, what for at the end. I love it because it just really crescendos. It's a bit like that Frank Sinatra song, In My Way. It just really crescendos up during the song. I absolutely love it. It's brilliant. Full volume.
And they sing about Arsene Wenger at the beginning as well, don't they?
What miserable French so-and-so, yeah.
Arsene Wenger! Right, okay, Craig, let's say that was your number three then. So what's going to be your number two disc to take on the island with you?
Okay, my number two disc is a clap from one of the all-time classic Disney films, The Little Mermaid, and I'm going to go with Part of This World.
Oh, it's soppy, isn't it?
Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the girl...
Well, there's many things why. I mean, I love The Little Mermaid. I love this song. Again, Philomagic, I think it's done brilliantly. It's done The Little Mermaid show very well. But to me, this just has memories of the first few times we took the kids to America. You know, Alex would learn this word by word and sing it driving down the 192, you know, at the top of her voice to anybody in the car that would listen, and still does now. Even Kieran will sing along now. And I really like it. You know, I like talking about all the things that she's found and how she's lost and, you know, she just wants to be normal. And to me, it's kind of like during the film as well, this is the changing part of the film. This is when kind of, you know, she's got over the troubles and it's all going to get better for her. So it's a classic Disney song. You know, it's so hard to pick. I wanted to have one new, one classic and one something different, which is my number one. And it's very, very hard to pick a classic Disney song. You know, you could have picked When I Wish Upon a Star. There's so many you could have picked. But I just really like this one. And I thought, yeah, why not? You know, it reminds me of, it's personal to me. If I'm stuck on an island without anyone, it will remind me of them. So why not?
Okay, I think that's a fair point. It isn't, again, another classic song from a classic movie. It's one that I sing along to if I'm in the car. Admittedly, it gets a bit high for me at some points, and I'm pretty certain the people who pass me on the motorway think I'm a weirdo. But it is a good song, and it's an amazing film, and, you know, it does evoke that sort of emotional Disney ballad style, doesn't it, that really does come through with it.
Day warm on the sand, betcha on land, they understand, but they don't reprimand their daughters.
Okay, then, let's go to your number one. So this is your ultimate. If you could take one song with you, is this going to be controversial or not? You could take one song with you onto the desert island. You know, it's the only one you can put on repeat on your iPod. What is it going to be?
I am going to take the theme from Spectromagic with me. And I do have it with me every day because it is the ringtone on my mobile phone. So I have not been bored with it. I think it's a beautiful piece of music. I love it to bits. I don't get bored with it. Obviously, it reminds me of the fantastic show. I actually prefer the music to this, to the music to Electrical Light Parade, although I think I prefer Electrical Light Parade show, the Main Street Electrical Parade. But to me, this is just, I just love it. It's classic. It's classical Disney music. It reminds me of the Magic Kingdom, which is the happiest place on earth. And I don't have any bad memories for it. I just really, really love it. And it's a nice long piece of music as well. And I know you've played it before for me on the show, Adam, because you know I like it. So that's why it's my number one.
What is it about this piece of music that puts it above Main Street Electrical for you, though?
I don't know. I don't like the only thing I don't like about the Main Street Electrical Parade is kind of the computerized vibe near Main Street Electrical Parade, that bit at the beginning. I don't really like that. I think it's very catchy, and also I think that the music from the water pageant is very similar to the Main Street Electrical
Parade. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So you know, if you haven't heard them for a long time, you hear them and think, oh, which one? Oh, I know which one that is. But this to me is very different, and it's very distinguishable. And you know, I don't get, you know, my phone rings 30, 40 times a day and I don't get bored with it. So I think other people probably do get very bored with it. That's why I'm working at home. But no, I still like it.
Juz, Main Street Electrical or Spectromagic?
Spectromagic, I think I agree with Craig. Classic Disney.
Yeah. I think I'm the same. I'm with Craig on Spectromagic would be my favourite out of those two, definitely. It's not my number one. My number one's a little bit more obscure, but we'll save that for another episode. So there we go. Craig, Spectromagic's coming at the end of this show. So if you want to listen out to right at the very end of the show, and we're going to play Spectromagic. Just you to choose the longest piece of music in the world.
Thank you. Can I have my honourable mentions, though?
Yeah, go on. What you got?
Okay, well, I had two honourable mentions. One of them was I wanted a kind of an oddball one, and I really like, and I only really came across this song, even though I love Monsters, Inc., I only really came across this song on Disney Mania CDs that the kids love, and I don't know if you've ever come across that, but they get stars from the Disney Channel singing completely different versions of Disney song. The Small World version is fantastic. You should listen to that. But there's a song, If I Didn't Have You, which is sung by Michael Musso, who's some bloke out of Hannah Montana. But I really like that song. That's kind of good. There's also a song, I had to have a Hannah Montana song on it just because I hear them every pigging day. But there's a song
on your iPod, he has them on at work. You know,
I do have them on my iPod because the kids take the iPod. But it's a song
from Hannah Montana.
Yeah, you
Craig's
can borrow it.
I am going to sing
on karaoke, but not this song, because this song is called Every Part of Me, and it's a beautiful song. I kind of like the guitars in it. And the last one, which I really love, a classic Disney song, is A Whole New World from Aladdin, but it is ruined to me by memories of that idiot Jordan and that other idiot Peter Andre in white suit.
So that's your favourite version? Show.
Yeah, I just you know when it just completely ruins, you know, it's like walking in on your parents when you're young or something. It's just state. It's burnt on my retinas.
You know, the show that used to be a Universal for All, it's just gone to a 12A.
Those complete idiots singing this, butchering this song. So to me, you know, that had to come off. But there could have been hundreds of honourable mentions, but it was just in my thought process today. That's what I came up with.
Lovely stuff. Okay, there we go. So Craig's had his three and his honourable mentions, and no doubt he will have many, many more if we ask him. But thank you. Thank you for your top three. And I think next time we come to this, possibly next show, maybe the show after, Juz is going to bring us his.
Yes, I must remember to do it next time.
That would always be a good start. Thank you guys for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks, Al.
What a Flexible, simple, valued, secure, honest, and trusted. They are some of the words that people think of when they book their Orlando holiday. And they are exactly the same words that people associate with CompleteOrlando.co.uk. With staff available 7 days a week, there are no better people to use. Contact the Orlando experts on 0800-294-8844 or visit www.CompleteOrlando.co.uk.
When you hear that piece of music, you know that's it, the end of the show. We thank you once again for joining us here, and we thank our sponsors, Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. Find them at attraction-tickets-direct.co.uk and completeorlando.co.uk. Thanks once again to Juz and Craig for joining me, bringing them their wisdom and insight. Thank you, Craig, for your Disney Island discs. Make sure you email us questions, comments, and suggestions. We do read all of those. We do reply to all of those. That's podcast@disneybrit.com. Do send your emails through to there. You can, of course, also ring our voicemail. We've still had a voicemail for a few weeks. That's on 0121-288-2858 if you're in Europe and the UK. And if you're in the US, 407-545-7980. We do listen to those. We will play them on the show, especially if you're in the parks. It'd be fantastic to hear from you. Make sure to check out our website at disneybrit.com. We're always updating bits and pieces over there, and that site will be continuing to grow. A lot of new stuff is going to be coming to the Disney Brit website over the next few months. You can check out our Facebook page and our Disney Brit fan page, as always. We're always putting stuff over on there as well. Well, I live on Facebook pretty much, and you can friend us up over on Facebook as well. Myself, Juz, or Craig over there are always putting new bits and pieces, and of course the Iron Orlando Facebook page as well, which always has loads of new news. Leave us a review on iTunes. Thank you to those people who have left reviews on iTunes over the past couple of weeks. It really is greatly appreciated, because people do read them and do comment on them, and it just helps them decide if they want to listen to the show or not. And we've really had some great feedback from you guys. Our YouTube channel is still over on YouTube, search for Disney Brit Podcast. And of course, please check out our sister podcast, Eye on Orlando. You can find that over on iTunes or visiting eyeonorlando.com. We are now going to be creating a weekly show. 1 week is going to be for news and rumours. The other week is going to be for discussion. So there will be a weekly show there. And of course, we are now weekly on ESPN Radio, ESPN Orlando, 1080 AM. You can check that out over there, where we will be giving you news and rumours and bits and pieces for that as well. Also, don't forget to head over to our forum, disneybrit.com/forum. And there you'll find loads of people who have joined recently. It's been a fantastic little forum. Loads of really great hints and tips that are coming out there. And one of the unique things we think about this forum is we're allowing people just to come over, post all sorts of bits and pieces to do with Disney or Orlando or Universal. And especially those people who own villas in the US, please come over and post your villa, your web address, things like that. We do not charge a single penny for you to advertise your villa on there. It's also the same for those people who've got anything to do with holiday or Orlando businesses. Please come over and post those on there as well. We're all about making people aware of the opportunities they have in Florida, in Orlando, in Disney, rather than really trying to tell you to come over and do it and then charge you for it. That's not what we're about at all. Also, if you wait until the end of the Enchanted music you're listening to right now, there will be Craig's choice of his Disney Island disc. That is the music for Spectrum Magic. We will play in full at the end of this show. And really, that's about it. The next show, the next Disney Bit podcast, will be on Wednesday, the 14th of April. So come and please join us for that. And really, that's it. So from me and from everybody here, say see you later and have a great couple of weeks.
splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life. And now, the Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney. In spectral magic.
Thank you. magic night, a million stars will play beside us, cast a spell of light. Glimmering, shimmering, carouseling round the world tonight. A symphony in spectral magic, pure enchantment lights our way.
And spectral magic.